John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And it's been a while on this show that we've had some phone calls, so we wanted to open things up on the, I guess you could say, on the eve of next eve, where the Seahawks are taking on the Minnesota Vikings, and this is game three. You know, the game now that you have to start really making some final decisions. You know, I want to get your calls at 866-979-3776, 421, 206-421 ESPN. Give us a call because I want to get your reaction. It's like, okay, thoughts on Jermaine Ifedi, thoughts on roster positions. What things are you going to watch in this game against the Minnesota Vikings? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Suki. Suki, what are you going to be watching
John,
for?
How's it going?
Doing good.
Hey, yes. I'm curious about how we use the receiving core, especially see if we can see if David Moore will continue to contribute like he has the past two games. And also, see, once you get down to the red zone, see if he can use Brandon Marshall to see how he fits into the team and everything.
No, I think that's very fair. Going back to the Saturday game, were you surprised? I mean, again, it worked really well because Russell Wilson had like 193 yards passing in the first half. They were really firing a lot of deep passes downfield, whether it's to David Moore, you know, whether it's to some of the other receivers. I mean, they were really getting the ball deep. John Brown, I mean, you can see that, you know, with Russell Wilson's accuracy in throwing the deep pass, they ended up throwing 21 passes in the first half. And, you know, again, this team was able to really show its speed and playmaking ability. That was huge. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they've got to figure out things in the red zone. So they made a step forward because they have been able to get some drives going in the first quarter, second quarter. They've been able to, you know, get some running going in the first quarter and second quarter, and also being able to get some passes downfield. But you're right. Now the next thing is they've got to do better in the red zone. You go down there and settle for field goals. Well, you're not going to come out with wins if you're going to do that. So I think you got a good read on it. From the Charger game, what did you like as far as the receiving core?
I mean, I like the way that Russell took deep shots, especially Devin Moore, you know, with that spectacular catch against two defenders, and how Jerron Brown as well. He looks like he's a great fit here. And, I'm really liking it. I'm just wanting to see if it continues for, you know, three quarters. This is the closest, you know, in-game action we're going to have. So, you know, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, the momentum keeps going, hopefully into the season.
Hey, Suki, thank you so much for the call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what are you going to be looking for in the game tomorrow night?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. I want to see a demonstrated ball control offense. I think, you know, when the Hawks were the best, they kept the other team's offense off the field. With a nice ball control offense, I want to see Procise carry sometime, you know, say between 10, 12 carries and get somewhere, you know, minimum of 3.5 average and not get hurt, be able to come back for the next thing. And then the other thing that I want to see is the defense, the defensive line, be able to consistently stop the run. I really think that their defensive line rotation, you know, having a bunch of high motor guys that can really, I think it's suspect. So that's things that will demonstrate things that I think the Hawks are going to need to be successful, and I'm not sure they have right now.
Well, I think they have the talent because, I mean, you take a look at the individuals, you know, whether it's going to be Jerron Brown, who I think is Jerron Reed. I think he's going to have a good year because I think this is his breakout year. It's year three. He was better. And I think that you can see they've got the combination of experience and youth. I mean, Nazir Jones, I mean, every time you see him in the game, not on the run stopping part of it. I mean, he is a good run stopper and can be, but he's always batting the ball down. That's a good sign. And then the two additions from the Minnesota Vikings, I think it's just a matter of trying to work their way in and try to get a little bit more consistency, because you're right, they gave up too many yards rushing toward the end of last year. They gave up too many yards rushing in the game against the Chargers, and so they've got to tighten that up. And again, they're going against right now a kind of undermanned Minnesota Viking offensive line because, you know, they don't have their starting center. Their Nick Easton, one of their guards, is out for the season, and they're just getting a couple other guys back from injury just in the last day or two, and you don't know if they're going to play. So, yeah, this will be a good one to see if they can stop the run and try to do that. But that is going to be one of the most important things, because you know, you don't want to have that run differential. And I'm not talking about the point in baseball differential. I'm talking about, you know, stopping the run differential, where you're gaining 110 yards rushing and giving up 130. That doesn't work into a good equation.
Yeah. That, and then they need to demonstrate that, that ball control offense to keep the other team's offense off the field. Run it.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, at least in the two preseason games, I know it's only two, but you probably saw more of that than you did in 14 or 16 games last year. Because, I mean, it was like a void of nothing in the first half. And, you know, they come out, they get the 12-play drive to get the Indianapolis game started. You know, they're able to move the ball, you know, get a drive down. And, you know, they had two chances to get touchdown drives early in the game. And then they either got a penalty that took away a 23-yard run by Chris Carson, or they got stopped in near the goal line. But I think, you know, they show signs they can do that. I mean, key was going to be making sure that Jermaine Ifedi blocks well at right tackle. He's been not consistently good at that, and I think his job is up. I mean, this could be the game that determines what they do with him, so he needs it. But no, I think you're seeing the signs of that. Now they just got to continue to evolve. Now it's going to be tough because they are going against one of the best defenses in the National Football League. Hey, Mike, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Marcus. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, good morning, John. Just had a question about the defense. I know that Elvis Dumervil is still out there, but besides him, is there anyone else that we can just look at even slightly remotely for some additional pass rush?
Yeah, well, they looked at Junior Gallette, but you kind of get the feeling both the Rams and the Seahawks weren't signing him. I know it was ironic. I ended up talking to him the other day after a Seahawk visit, and for whatever reason, I mean, he didn't get to spend any time with Pete Carroll or John Snyder. He came in, and you know, he said that the Achilles looked good. And if you go back, I mean, numbers-wise, he put up pretty good numbers as far as pressuring the quarterback. He's had some off-the-field issues. He certainly had the two Achilles tendons, but that's one option. And again, Dumervil's out there. I'm glad that Kyle Shanahan mentioned his name, because it's like you wonder, it's like, gee, is he still wanting to play? Well, Kyle Shanahan said, yeah, we'll consider bringing him back. So that at least shows you that maybe he's going to be in play. You know, you'll look at Eric Walden tomorrow to see what he can they have. But, you know, honestly, when you start to look at the equation, depending on what happens, if Deion Jordan can't start the season, the Seahawks are down four of their top five pass rushers. And so there's openings there. I know Quentin Jefferson's doing some good things. I know Brandon Jackson's doing some good things. Rasheem Green looks great so far with his three sacks, but they still need more numbers. That's why tomorrow the one to watch is going to be Eric Walden to see what he has. 2 years ago in Indianapolis, he had 11 sacks.
Yeah, it just seems like the Dumervil, maybe he's asking for too much. I don't know what the salary cap is for Seattle. I think they're like $10 million under or whatever. But still, they got to do something, because I was never counting on Jordan. I really wasn't. You just can't trust that guy. Too many injuries. But I don't know. They got to do something, trade or something to get some pass rush. I'm really concerned about that.
Yeah, I think you should be. I mean, I think that they're concerned, too. I mean, they wouldn't be bringing in Eric Walden in the last week and letting Marcus Smith go if that weren't the case. Hey, Marcus, thank you for the phone call, and thank you for all the calls. We will now come back and try to get the grade book out. It's time for the report card, and it's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
on demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the report card with the professor.
And each day on the report card, what we do is we judge the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart and the dumb, the things that are said, the things that are done, whether it's good or bad. We'll take a grade on that, and we'll go into what's some of the crazy stuff going into sports or some of the smart stuff going into sports. And so, Maura, what do we have as far as the report card?
Well, up first, I don't know if you recall, but Richard Sherman has never seemed to really like fantasy football or the people who play it. He's seemed to look down on it before, but now Sherman is announcing that he's a co-founder of a new daily fantasy sports app called Daily Number that will begin by offering paid contests in 23 states. Sherman will also appear in ads for the app, which positions itself as an alternative to other daily fantasy games by allowing players to set lineups that try to beat a preset target score. So here's some clips of him talking about fantasy in the past.
From what I understand, the rule is for the gamblers, you know, for to make sure that the odds and everything are what they're supposed to be, which is apparently what the league is concerned about when talking about injuries and things like that. So maybe somebody should look into that, because I thought we weren't a gambling league and we were against all those things. But our injury report is specifically to make sure the gamblers get their odds right. So, I mean, that's fantasy football. Yeah, oh, my God. they're almost as bad as the gamblers. A lot of people, a lot of fans out there, you know, have looked at players even less like people because of fantasy football and things like that. You go, you say, oh, man, this guy got hurt. You're not thinking, hey, man, this guy got hurt. He really, you know, he's really physically hurt, and he's going to take time to recover, and it's probably going to affect his mental state and his physical state. And, you know, now he has a long, rigorous rehab. You're thinking, oh, man, he's messing up my fantasy team. And I think that's why you've seen the frustration from a lot of players saying they don't care about your fantasy team. They don't care about how it affects your fantasy, because these are real players. This is real life. You know, this is real life for them. This is their real job.
So how do you grade him getting into the fantasy business now?
Well, I mean, again, I guess it shows the education. I'll give him a B- because you can see there was a reluctance. He didn't have respect for it. He thought it was kind of a negative. But then you have to understand that it's big money. I mean, there's so much more money coming into this thing. And I think the impact of the gambling part of it is going to be huge. I mean, I can just see that from people that I talk to, and, you know, opportunities are there and all that stuff. I mean, the injury report is so important. Figuring out, you know, who the right players are for fantasy is important, but also trying to figure out who can win. And I think you can see from all the books that are opening around the country, there's more money piling in because of this. And well, I mean, hey, Richard's a smart guy. And again, if you're a smart guy, you adjust to change. And so he's adjusting to change. And so even though I have to downgrade him a one grade for being reluctant to get into it, I give him a decent grade because at least he got into it.
All right. Next up, we have another former Seahawk. You know, Marshawn Lynch was pretty famous for his love and affinity for Skittles. Mm-hmm. They have finally teamed up with him to give him his own pack. So right now they have made available, they're just calling it Marshawn's pack. And this is Marshawn. It was a promotional video they did where he pried open this crate of Skittles and he's swimming in it.
Mama, we did it.
This is huge, bro. My face is on this pack of Skittles. This is dope.
Wow. Well, at least they got him to talk. Gives him a chance to at least get before the microphone and say some things. And so we'll give him a B. I mean, one thing we know about him, we know how he doesn't like to do interviews. You know, he shies away from as much as he can in regards to that. But, you know, he knows how to try to market himself. He's an excellent person as far as that goes. And so the business person wins out in Marshawn Lynch. And so I think that because of that, if he can cash in on money, he can cash in on a good grade.
Will you be buying a Marshawn pack of Skittles?
Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, Skittles is okay, but it's not Mike and Ike's. Now, if he was on Mike and Ike's and he had a Marshawn pack, I would get the Marshawn pack on Mike and Ike's. But, you know, the Skittles part, it's like that's one that, you know, maybe if you're getting a candy run, that's once in every six as opposed to once in every two or three.
So we need to get a professor pack of Mike and Ike's. I'll work
on
that.
That'd be nice. Can we get it on database too? Or
yeah, there we go.
There we go.
It'll have numbers from the database as part of the packaging. Just mm-hmm. stats
that
everywhere.
Would work.
All right. Mm-hmm. Next up,
that'll work.
Yeah. Next up, we have more Hard Knocks. I feel like I have one of these for you every day. It's mm-hmm. Hugh Jackson sitting down with Dez Bryant, trying to sell him on coming to the Browns, but he makes a pretty big bold prediction at the end.
It's going to take guys like you who love to compete, exactly. Who love to go in these big stadiums. It's like, we're here, and we're coming here to kick your ass.
Yes, sir.
And that's the kind of guys I'm looking for.
Coach, this new to me. Right. Just being honest. All this new.
Way, I get it.
Just being honest. The way you expressing yourself, uh-huh. The way you talking to me. Mm-hmm. I barely even know each other, right. And I feel comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, that's what these players want. Mm-hmm. I want to just be honest with you.
Right.
Just want that realness. Because
right.
I'm going to give you who I am. I feel like I'm an easy person to talk to. I love learning. Mm-hmm. I want to know things. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's something I'm not doing right, mm-hmm. I want to know those mm-hmm. things. Because I feel like, you know, we all deserve that. We all deserve that opportunity.
21 days, baby. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh Steelers. Right here at home. In front of the dog pound. It'd be unbelievable. This will be the greatest turnaround in sports history.
Greatest turnaround in sports history, Professor.
Wow. I don't know. I kind of have to give Hugh a D on this one, because I don't know if going from 1 to 5 wins is going to be considered the greatest turnaround in NFL history. And you notice that great talk with Dez Bryant apparently sold so well that they're now no longer talking, and doesn't look like it's going to be any kind of a deal.
I know. I was commenting that it almost sounds kind of like a first date. Dez was like, I barely even know you, but I like the way you express yourself. I feel so comfortable.
Yeah, it's just so weird. And I don't know if you saw some of Dez's weird text today. I mean, he was ripping. Like he says, well, I never yelled at Dak Prescott. Was like, I don't know. I was standing on the sidelines watching you in the Dallas-Seattle game yelling at Dak Prescott and yelling at the coaches and yelling at everybody else. It's like, is there like short-term memory here on what the real Dez Bryant is like? I mean, I can't tell you how many times. Again, I remember one game I saw Dez in Detroit, and it was a game on the road. And, you know, that was one where he was going up and down the bench when everybody was on the side and the defense was on the field yelling at everybody. But after the game says, oh, no, Jerry Jones says, oh, no, he was trying to encourage everybody. Well, is he encouraging everybody by just like yelling at him? It's like too much. That's why, unfortunately, he doesn't have a job right now. He will soon, but he doesn't have one now.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Apparently, I know there's some reports out of New England that they are not interested, even though they've cut 3 receivers in the last month.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
there are some teams that need receivers.
They brought Kenny Britt. I'm surprised they brought Kenny Britt in, because he's a handful. And, you know, I was even surprised when they gave him a contract extension. But, you know, it was like $200,000 in the end, so they didn't really lose too much. But I thought that was a little strange.
Yeah, I did too, especially because he was on the roster last year and did not contribute. So I'm not sure what they saw there. But we'll see what happens. I think Dez Bryant, like you said, will find a home, but it's taking quite a long time.
No question. And we'll still see. The saga continues. What else do we have?
Actually, I think we need to get to break. That's it for grades today, Professor.
Oh, is that it? Okay. So you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. Text us at 710-710. The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Pete Carroll at the podium, kind of giving an update as far as who's in and who's out as far as the game against the Minnesota Vikings. And it looks like Bradley McDougal, who has a sore pectoral muscle, he's going to miss the game. And so that means that probably Tedrick Thompson's going to start. And it does look like, that'll be at free safety. So that means Delano Hill is going to get a chance to really option to see how he can do at strong safety. So it'll be interesting to watch 2 of the draft choices from last year. But don't discount Maurice Alexander. Now, Maurice missed a game last week. I think he's going to be able to play this week. So that's going to be one. Pete also talked about they're going to take a good look at George Fant at right tackle. That'll be something to watch because, again, they're trying to garner as much. I mean, so far, Maura, it's weird. It's that they've had more casualties trying to challenge Jermaine Ifedi than successes. You know, they moved Jamarco Jones over to left tackle to right side, and he gets his bad high ankle sprain that needs surgery. You know, Isaiah Battle, who was battling for the job, he gets the knee injury. Now, he may be able to play, but it's kind of curious to see, you know, the downturn in Ifedi and then the challenge and the reach to try to get them out there to try to replace him, or at least challenge him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I really think that you probably don't want Ifedi there when the season starts, but it seems like they don't want to give up on him either, so you have to find some way to shift it. I know you like the idea of putting DJ Fluker at the tackle position. Mm-hmm. And moving Ifedi inside.
And my read on it, because I didn't think they were going to do Fant, because, I mean, really, that was his first game back in a year, and now he has to change everything as far as what he does, and that's a big challenge. You know, Fluker wouldn't be as challenged because he's played tackle before, but I think, you know, he's probably not going to play because of that finger injury, broken fingers, so that might be something that would be next week and not this week. By the way, Chris Boswell, the kicker, place kicker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, just got a 5-year deal at $20 million. What do we have as far as text questions at 710-710?
509 says, Professor, which Seahawks past-present safety combo would work well together? Earl Thomas and Kenny Easley, or Cam Chancellor and Eugene Robinson?
I think either one, but I think, boy, you put easily in with anybody. I mean, he's just so good, and you know that's where this franchise has been so fortunate. I mean, you think you have a Hall of Fame safety in Ken Easley, who was really robbed of a great career because of the kidney problem that he had, and had to give up football at the age of 27. I mean, all the interceptions and everything else. But Eugene is the free safety, and so you put any combination of that together. One thing about with Kenny, of course, he's played the free safety position, and really, because what happened, he was so good that they had to put him on the side because he was such a great strong. I mean, the guy was so great, but again, any combination of those four works.
All right, the 360 says, John, what is the status of Antonio Gates?
Still negotiating. I know I was down here on the sidelines on Saturday talking to people, and they're still talking, and so you kind of get the idea. Maybe once they get through this third preseason game, they get something done because they're so thin at the tight end position. I don't think they really have answers after Hunter Henry blew out his ACL. So they're still talking, and maybe what it comes down to is that you're Antonio Gates. I mean, you've been there forever, and so if you can take another week where you don't have to be in
training camp. I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, I think that might be one of the things. So again, you're seeing right now the beginning of the changes that happen before next week's cut, where you get all the guys trying to maneuver and figure things out, and then you can settle things out. And it's not like Antonio has to learn the playbook or something like that. He's been in it forever. So I wouldn't be surprised if he signed sometime next week.
253 says, hey, John and Maura, good morning. As Seahawks fans, what should we be looking for in tomorrow's game?
I think what you look for, first off, the right tackle position to see what Ifedi is able to do. Can he pick up his game, or is it going to continue to drag? Can George Fant be able to make that quick adjustment from left tackle to right tackle? Is Isaiah Battle going to be out there? So you look on the offensive line. You look at the receiver position, and I think the top five receivers are set. And so you look at Marcus Johnson going up against Dontre Stringfellow and Amara Darbo. I mean, really, a lot's going to be needed out of Amara Darbo. I think you look at the cornerback position and look and see, how much does Myron Maxwell play and how does he look, Dante Johnson, and how he looks. Look at safety, and we mentioned Delano Hill. I think what you're going to see is Hill start and Stringfellow because McDougal's not going to be out there. And so just seeing how that young combination looks.
206 says, what is going on with J.R. Sweezy?
We're waiting to see if he's going to be able to play, but he's been fighting an injury, and he's returned to practice this week, and I think that's an important one because, let's say, for example, you want to consider DJ Fluker at right tackle. Then you can put J.R. Sweezy at the right guard position and see how he does. And then, or you want to put Ifedi in there. So I think he's an option. They gave him a 1-year deal at $1.5 million. He hasn't practiced until this week, but I think there's an outside chance he can play in this game.
206 says, Professor, what are the fines for Earl Thomas so far, and how much could he be fined before the regular season starts?
Okay, so he's probably now at, $1.5 million, somewhere in that neighborhood, because he's got the $40,000 a day fine. He's already lost one-fourth of his $1.9 million signing bonus proration. So, he's heading to the big one now. And then, of course, once you get into the regular season, he loses, his $850,000 and it's 17 times that. So he loses like $5,000 a day or a game or a week. So at some point you got to think, is that you really want to do this and take it into the season? Because the one thing I think you saw from the Cam Chancellor holdout of 2 years ago, they're going to keep the money. They're going to come back and they're not going to let him off. And so all he's doing right now is losing money, not gaining any clout.
509 says, hey, John, if this season is a disappointment like many quote-unquote experts think it will this be Pete's last season?
No. First off, I don't think it's going to be a disappointment. Again, will it be a playoff year? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I think they're an 8-9, and if things go right, a 10-win team. And so that could get them into the playoffs. But no, Pete's safe. I mean, let's put it this way. Are you going to fire a coach that has the ability to get you to the Super Bowl on what's going to be a reset year? Again, this year is more like 2011, where they got the second year. They started to get the young players that they had selected over the last couple of those two drafts in. They're now starting to settle in as far as their personality of the team. The last thing you want to do is make a coaching change.
360 says, is Blake Bortles really worth $25 million a year?
Well, he's not being paid $25 million a year, so that's not the case. Really, what it was I think it, you can almost consider it a cap-friendly type of deal because it's really in that $18 million a year range, and it's a deal that there's only, you know, 1 year. They get a little bit of cap room out of it. He gets a little bit of a guarantee into next year. So it's still kind of a – he's still on a prove-it type of deal.
360 says, any word on Ed Dixon?
I think that there's an outside – well, as Pete said it yesterday, I don't know if he's going to be able to practice next week, but he thinks he's going to be there for the regular season. So maybe he's just one more week away from getting that groin injury better.
206 says, still don't understand the tight end rankings. Nick Vannett, really?
Well, I mean, you only have two options. I mean, you got Nick Vannett and you got Will Disley. Vannett's been in the system now into this is his third year. Disley, is coming on strong and is competing for that starting job temporarily until Dixon is out there. But I still think Vannett drops the ball too much. I think he's still a decent blocker. You can see he moves pretty well. But those are the things that are now happening, and that's why I think it's going to be fascinating to watch these next 10 days, because you will see some surprises. Prizes, I think.
206 says, in the last preseason game, we got gashed on the run. Do you think we can really stop the run this season?
I do, because I think that Jaron Reed is going to be good. I mean, I still think they're fine. Well, I know if you throw Quentin Jefferson in there and you go with what Clint Hurt says, their assistant head coach, that it's like they're six deep at defensive tackle. Although I think right now, with how thin they are at the ends, Quentin's going to be more end than he is tackle, but he can play both. But I think that, I think they're going to be fine at defensive tackle. And I think that it's just a matter that, hey, remember, it's like a lot of teams are like this. I mean, you're still trying to get your tackling down. This is only the second preseason game, and there hasn't been enough hitting to get things right, but they need to tighten things up, no question.
509 says, is UW going to set the tone against Auburn, and is Savon Ahmed going to play a bigger role, hopefully?
Well, you would hope. I mean, I think it's going to be a big challenge, but hey, they come in sixth and Auburn comes in ninth. The fact that they're on the road, that doesn't help. The fact they're on the road in a neutral site, that helps a little bit. But I think the key to the game is going to be the ability to run. I think that you can see that they're going to be a little bit better at pass rush and a little bit better than wide receiver than people think. Hey, it's a good football team. And this is going to be the ultimate test to see, where this team can go, because you win this one, hey, they may not lose a game after that. And if they lose one, well, it's tough, but they still, I think, are going to come out of this okay. Big, big game, though.
All right, that's it for text.
Okay, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, talk to Bob Stelton. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Couple more things from Pete Carroll over at the VMAC. It looks like Byron Maxwell is not going to be able to play because of a hip flexor. That means that Dante Johnson really has a chance tomorrow to see if he can establish himself as the starter on the other side of Shaquille Griffin. No J.R. Sweezy in this game, and it's kind of interesting. Now, it turns out he has a high ankle sprain. That's why he's been sidelined, and so they expect him to be able to play next week. But the interesting part is not at right guard. They have him now trying to go over at left guard challenging Ethan Posick. I don't think there's much of a chance that he could take that job away, but still trying to fight himself for a roster spot. And joining us right now is Bob Stelton. And so, Bob, kind of interesting to see how this is all coming together now as we head into the last preseason or third preseason game, but really the last one of major impact, because this is the one that's the test, the rehearsal, all that, to see who can make it and who cannot.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see how much we see of Brandon Marshall when we were out there listening to Pete. Marshall was out there working one-on-one with Trey Flowers. Looked like he was just kind of, coaching him up, if you will, out there, which was pretty cool to see. But I'm very interested to see if he can bring something. I know he's looked good in practice, talking about Marshall, but I mean, so far in the games, it hasn't happened. It seems like there's becoming a consensus that he's on the team, and I'm curious as to why that is, or do we need to see more in game action for him to actually secure a spot?
I mean, it'd be nice, but you know, he's probably 80% as far as
why?
You know, coming back from his injury, and so maybe that takes him a little step slower. But what you see in practice is that you know, he'll make one or two real big catches a game. And again, he's so unique compared to all the other wide receivers. I know that Tanner McElvoy's tall and can do some things, but I mean, Brandon Marshall can do so much more. He's a go up and get him type of guy. He's a big target in the red zone, and he's got a good relationship with Russell Wilson. I'd be stunned if he doesn't make the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'll lean toward you on that. I'll defer to you. I just, to this point, I look at it and go, yeah, okay, good. Obviously, he's got great experience that and knowledge he can impart on the young guys, young receivers, and as I was just talking about, young cornerbacks out there. But is that going to be enough for them to say, we're going to use a roster spot for this guy who to this point, as you said, isn't completely healthy, hasn't shown anything in games yet. So I don't know. I think this will be an interesting game for him. I mean, if he's on the team, he's on the team. Great. They've seen something in him and they feel like he's got a value. That's fine. But to this point, I haven't really seen it.
Well, but I think also you look at the play calls that they were making last week. I mean, they were trying to get more passes downfield, trying to play action passes than they were necessarily the short passes. I mean, you notice, you know, in the first week they tried to come out and get the ball to the running backs. I mean, what was it? 13 of the 18 completions in the game were to running backs and tight ends. So they worked on the short stuff in game one against Indianapolis, and they tried to work on the longer stuff going against the Chargers. And, of course, if you're going to be working on the longer stuff, that's not Brandon Marshall's game.
Right.
I mean, he's not going to be able to go down and beat you on a nine route. That's something that, you know, that's not his game. I mean, his game is more, you know, being physical with the cornerbacks, you know, going up and getting the ball, making back shoulder throws, all those different things. And what I do like is that, you know, particularly for a young cornerback like Trey Flowers, I think that because, you know, he's beaten Trey Flowers several times in practice, Trey gets better going up against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, they were the only two out there on the field when Pete was talking, and they were working. You could see Brandon was schooling him. I mean, just, you know, talking to him about here's what you need to do here and going through, you know, they weren't in pads or anything, but it was just interesting to see them work together out there. So, listen, like I said, if he's on the team, I'm going to trust their judgment that he's going to bring something of value. But to this point, you haven't seen a ton, but we saw a ton from Cason Williams last year, and he didn't make the team. So it's always hard to judge what it is that they actually want to see, what they need to see in order to feel like this is a guy that's going to contribute and is worth the roster spot. And then the other thing that stuck out you touched on is Sweezy, although he's injured, they have him set to compete with Posick at left guard, which is interesting. You know, I know they said Fluker will be back out there for this game, had the finger injury in the first game. And then Fant over there, I guess, hopefully getting up to speed quick enough to provide some level of competition for Ifedi, who needs it.
I mean, doesn't it show you the damage right now that's being caused right now trying to get a Fetty's game? Because, I mean, here they take Jamarco Jones, they move him from left to right, and then he gets the high ankle sprain, now is probably going to be on injured reserve. Then you have Isaiah Battle, who is legitimately battling for the job, and then he is carted off with a knee injury. I haven't seen whether he's going to be able to play or not. I know he's back to practice, so that's encouraging. And then you take Fant, who is 1 year off an ACL, has his first game at left tackle, does pretty decently, and now he has to learn everything anew over on the right side, and all this is to accommodate what's there with Ifedi. I just wonder, were it not for the finger injury of DJ Fluker, that would they consider, because again, if you're taking Fant and really putting him in a tough spot like that, and you're kind of desperate to do it, wouldn't it have been easier if Fant were, I mean, if they take Fluker and just put him at right tackle, and then you have Sweezy at guard or Ifedi at guard?
Boy, do you think he's quick enough, though, to play on the outside? Talking about Fluker, he's such a huge guy, and I know he's, you know, dealing with a finger, but you see him walk around, and I don't know how much that knee hurts or doesn't hurt him, but he doesn't walk like it feels good. So I'm just wondering, does he have the quickness to play on the end?
Well, quickness, no. I mean, that's not his game. But again, he's played tackle before. It's not like it's a new position for him.
Right.
And, yeah, you're right. He's not a movement type of guy. I mean, he's a guy that's just going to try to physically bear down. Now, you know, how his techniques are, you have to kind of wonder about. But remember, it's like this isn't the optimal situation. I mean, it's like, you know, they're doing this because Ifedi is struggling. And, you know, they're looking at the options that are on the team. And it's like if they take Fant over from left tackle after one game – one quarter or so and put him over there, they're in a desperate situation. And maybe you go to somebody that's done it before just to test it out for one game.
By the way, what would that say about Ifedi if Fant, who doesn't play right tackle, who's just now being put in that position to sort of learn it, get used to it, if he were to beat out Ifedi? I mean, it's already – what we've seen from Ifedi has been damning enough, right? Well, I mean, there are questions from anybody that's watched him about his ability. But if he were to be beaten out by a guy who's coming back from a major injury, who played on the other side of the line, who's now just getting his first looks at that spot, and eventually he's beaten out by him, I mean, I don't know what's left to say about Ifedi at that point.
No, I mean, what's left to say is that, change could be coming. I mean, again, there's too many guarantees in that contract that, cause some issues, no question about that. But, what you wonder about is that you've got to get that right tackle. Because one of the things I know that Russell Wilson was liking was that there's continuity. He called it the more continuity on this line than any that he's seen since the 2013 season. But that's kind of an indictment because, again, four out of the five may be doing well, but the fifth is Ifedi, and they need to have him do well.
Well, you do, but as bad as things have been, seeing four out of five would be a market improvement over what we've seen in previous seasons, where you had maybe two out of five or sometimes one out of five playing well. So it would be a massive step up. Even if Ifedi is there, I feel better about what Russell's got in front of him. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean it's elite. I'm not saying it's the Cowboys or the Raiders or any of the other teams you look at offensive lines that are praised. But it feels like, and we'll see in the regular season, it's a decided step up from what it's been.
Well, of course, I mean, but that's how things change. I mean, boy, what a mess right now. You talk about the Cowboys, considered either Dallas or Philadelphia with the best offensive line in football. But, their starting center, Travis Frederick, has the nerve issue right now that couldn't keep him out the entire year or at least a couple months. That's bad. Then you have Zach Martin fighting like crazy to come back from a knee injury. Tyrone Smith isn't going to be able to play in this preseason game because of a, he's got some neck issues and all that. And then, they've got a draft choice has come up, and he's been terrible. And so all of a sudden, it was so bad that Jerry Jones made the proclamation Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott are not playing the rest of the preseason.
Well, at least you have the luxury of a mobile quarterback like the Seahawks do and an established running back in Zeke Elliott. And we'll see if one of these running backs out here can establish themselves. And that goes a long way, John, as you know, to cover up some of the warts of a suspect offensive line. And I would argue we saw that with Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson here. The line wasn't great. It wasn't nearly as bad as it is now, but it was far from their strength. Yet you looked at it, they led the league in rushing because of those two guys. You were able to cover up the shortcomings that existed even back then when you had a James Carpenter who, when he played here, was not great. A J.R. Sweezy who, when he played here, was a really good run blocker, not a good pass blocker. So you were able to sort of come up some, cover up the shortcomings on that offensive line because you had a dominant back, because you had a mobile quarterback.
Hey, so what's on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
Well, we'll definitely get into what's Brady Henderson is going to be sitting in with us. How about that? He's going to be
Nice.
Yeah, Tom's out today, so Brady Henderson will be co-hosting with me today. So we'll talk a lot of Seahawks with him. We'll obviously get into what's happening with Urban Meyer in Ohio State. Bob Condotta will be with us at 1 o'clock. El Hombre Michael Bradley, a bonus edition. He wants to sound off on what's happening at Ohio State. So he's with us at 2 o'clock.
Okay, well, that sounds good. That's Bob Grouse and Tom coming up next. Our thanks to Maura Dooley, and congratulations on the first interview with Marcus Johnson. Also to Ashley Cox for running the board. We'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.